We all have to figure out the world, to make sense of it. What does it take to do that well? And why is doing it well so important? I'm J. Michael Stebbins, the Toth Lonergan Visiting Professor of Interdisciplinary Studies at Seton Hall University. This podcast is coming to you courtesy of Seton Hall's Institute for Communication and Religion, which is housed in the College of Communication and the Arts. The Institute promotes open, clear dialogue and study between religious believers and the broader public in the communication disciplines. The title of this podcast is Reducing the Mismatch, Some Thoughts on How We Figure Out the World. Human beings have always needed to figure out the world, to make sense of it. We've been doing that, each one of us, from our earliest days, as infants, toddlers, young children, adolescents. The process has never stopped. We still have to figure things out. We still have to make sense of the world in all the arenas of our lives, home and family, work and colleagues, the communities we live in, our friendships, technology, the economy, politics, international relations, culture, sports and leisure, the environment, the needs of people near and far, whether there is a God, and if so, what God is like. And of course, we also have to figure out ourselves. Who are we? Who do we want to be? What makes us tick? And we don't want just any answers to our questions. We want to understand things correctly. We want the truth. The problem, of course, is that while making sense of some things is quite easy, most of what's going on in the world, both natural and human, isn't self-evident to us. The truth about things isn't just lying out there waiting to be picked up like shells on a beach. We don't just open our eyes and see what's true. Reaching the truth, reaching correct understanding, is an achievement, and winning it takes commitment and hard work. It's important to talk about this, partly because while making sense of the world has always been difficult, the challenge we face today is in many ways harder than ever. For one thing, the world is increasingly, and in some ways bewilderingly, complex. It also seems to be changing faster and in more fundamental and unsettling ways than we're used to. And we're also acutely aware that some of the important information we need in order to figure out the world isn't always available to us, or if it is available, it isn't always reliable. All these things make our task of figuring out the world and what's going on in it more difficult. So I want to share some thoughts on why the way we go about figuring things out matters so much, and offer some suggestions that might help us do it better. I've learned a lot about how we use our minds to figure things out from the work of Bernard Lonergan, the 20th century Jesuit philosopher and theologian, who did magnificent work in the area of cognitional theory and showed why being clearer about the mental process by which we know helps us to be clearer regarding just about everything else. Much of what I'm going to say today is influenced by Lonergan's work. I'm not going to talk in detail about the process of knowing, the interrelated activities that lead us from having a question to attaining some knowledge of what's true or real. I'm also leaving aside any discussion of how we think when we're trying to plan a future course of action. And I'm not going to analyze how we make value judgments or decisions. All I'm going to focus on here is how we think when we're trying to figure out what's going on or what went on. That is, when we're trying to understand as correctly as we can something that happened or existed in the past or something that is happening or exists in the present. In other words, I'm talking about knowledge of reality. The reason why I'm taking this focus is simple and rather obvious. We have to correctly understand situations before we can make any reliable value judgments about them or make plans that will address them effectively. Because this simple, fairly obvious point is often overlooked in practice. I'm going to repeat it. We have to correctly understand situations before we can make any reliable value judgments about them or make plans that will address them effectively. Now, of course, we have to make value judgments and determine possible courses of action and make decisions. But correct understanding of the situation we're dealing with, a grasp of what is actually going on, is the essential foundation. In order for our value judgments, our decisions, our courses of action to be sound, they must be based on a grasp of the relevant facts, the truth, the reality of what is going on. Over time, our ability to make progress, both as individuals and as groups and as a society, depends on our success in understanding, with reasonable accuracy, the things and situations we wish to improve. To put all of this in context, I want to talk a little bit about the desire for truth. The great religious traditions of the world emphasize the importance of truth, of achieving knowledge of what is real. So do the traditions of classical philosophy. One of the basic convictions of many of these traditions, and I share this conviction, is that human beings are endowed with a desire to know. It's a deep, insistent drive toward reality and truth. It's fundamental to human nature. This desire to know is the source and driving force of all our efforts to seek correct answers. The questions we ask are expressions of that desire. So too are all the steps we take to reach understanding and to determine whether our understanding has a basis in sufficient evidence. In short, we're designed, we're built to figure things out, to reach correct understanding. But it's important to note some facts about the way we do this. First of all, the process by which we figure things out is incremental. We understand and verify bit by bit, and our knowledge gradually accumulates and develops. We don't get it all at once. This means that our understanding of things is usually only partial. A second and related point is that we're also not built to get things right every time. Sometimes we discover that what we thought was true is actually false. Fortunately, if our desire to know is fully engaged, if we really want the truth, if we aren't satisfied by just any plausible or attractive idea, then we're willing to recognize and correct our mistakes. This is why Lonergan frequently refers to human knowing as a self-correcting process. Now, clearly, the world as it actually exists isn't a complete mystery to us. Each of us figures out a lot of things quite successfully, and all of us together have figured out an immense amount about what's true. There are countless significant ways in which our understanding of the world matches the world as it really is. But it's just as obvious that we haven't figured out everything, and in some cases that what we've figured out is or has been incorrect. That's why there can be mismatches, and possibly some very significant ones, between the world as we understand it to be and the world as it actually is. These mismatches are unknown to us. We're not aware that we are in error about some aspect or other of the real world. They're in our blind spot, those mismatches. Now, I want to say something about why being alert to this problem is so crucial. Given the vast quantity of instantaneous and often hyper-emotional communication that's such a prevalent feature of our environment, it's all too easy for us to construct our understanding of the world out of whatever thoughts and ideas and images happen to be floating by, blown by the random breezes of shifting, often conflicting public opinion. If we aren't careful to consistently engage our desire to know, our desire for correct understanding, then over time, our minds can become like a roadside ditch that fills up with whatever trash happens to accumulate there. This is a problem. Because whenever we try to figure out what's going on, make value judgments about what's going on and what ought to change, and make plans to bring about change, we're always doing so only in terms of the world as we currently understand it to be. But when we take action that's based on our understanding of the world, those actions and their consequences occur entirely in the real world, the world as it actually is. So here's the problem. If there's enough of a mismatch between the world as we understand it and the world as it actually is, our actions can lead to unintended and sometimes devastating real-world consequences. So it's imperative that we reduce the mismatch. That's the point of trying to improve our efforts to understand. That's why it's crucial for us to take responsibility for the way we go about trying to figure out the world. Even though human beings are equipped to be intelligent, to reach correct understanding, even to be wise, we often fall short. So what are some things we can do to enhance our performance as intelligent, judicious, wise creatures who, according to the book of Genesis, are made in the image and likeness of God? Let me offer some suggestions. First of all, I want you to think about paying attention. That's because we can only figure out something if we're paying attention to it. So, how do we pay attention well? A lot of the time, our desire to know is sort of idling in the background of our minds, but when we're paying attention, we may notice something interesting, or unusual, or puzzling, or threatening, or unexpected. This can cause our desire to know to engage, so that we begin to wonder about what we've been paying attention to, which sets our process of figuring things out in motion. But what do we pay attention to? That's determined in any moment by what we happen to be concerned about, or what interests us, or what we consider most important. And our concerns, interests, and views on what is or isn't important stem from our current way of making sense of the world. The issue is, when it's important for us to figure out something, to reach a correct understanding of a person, to get to the bottom of a situation, we need to be paying attention with our desire to know leading the way. This isn't always easy. Our concerns and interests are often accompanied by strong feelings. For example, anxiety, anger, the desire to win, impatience. These all tend to narrow down the field of data that we're considering, the aspects of our experience that we're paying attention to. We end up trying to understand only those things that we think are immediately relevant to our in-the-moment concerns, rather than trying to understand the bigger, fuller picture of what's going on. The point, then, is that there are times when our openness to the fullness of what we are experiencing may be somewhat restricted. What can we do about this? Well, we can practice really looking or observing, really listening, really being mindful, including really listening and being mindful of what another person is saying to us. Among other things, this means not multitasking by trying to pay attention to two things at once. Most obviously these days, the people we're with is one thing, and whatever is on our phone is another, and we're trying to pay attention to both. We can try to explicitly note to ourselves what we're paying attention to. Are our feelings or interests or value judgments narrowing our focus? We can put that question to ourselves. We can also practice describing what we see or hear non-judgmentally, without labels, so that we give ourselves a chance to fully experience before we understand or try to understand what's actually going on. We don't leap to a value judgment before we've had a chance to understand the thing, the person, the situation about whom we want to make eventually a value judgment. I also want to say some things about questions. And that's because questions are expressions of our desire to know, our desire for truth. They're our primary instrument for advancing in understanding and knowledge, and they're our primary weapon against any biases, mistaken ideas, complacency, or rationalizations that may be interfering with our efforts to figure things out correctly. We often feel our questions before we know exactly what they are. We can have a vague sense of puzzlement in an unfamiliar situation, or a feeling of unease when we're confronted with a fact that doesn't seem to fit with other things we know. When this happens, it's important to try to put our questions into words. Until we do that, we don't know what direction we should take in order to find a good answer. In other words, to have a good answer, you often need to have a good question. Having a clearly articulated question gives you traction, a place to get started, a basis for selecting which data to focus on. Also, notice that we aren't in control of our questions. We can't make ourselves, much less anyone else, have a question. Because they can occur at odd times, it's easy to lose or forget them. So record them somehow, which gives you an opportunity to recall them later. Now let me say something about understanding, making sense of things, figuring things out. When we understand, we grasp the meaning, the explanation, the cause, the reason why, the intelligibility of something specific and concrete. Understanding typically emerges in us by way of insights into particular images or particular diagrams or words or experiences or memories. On the basis of that understanding that comes to us, we can sometimes generalize. Now, it can happen that we think we've understood something, but in fact we've accepted a cheap substitute masquerading as understanding. One way we sometimes answer the question, what's going on here, is by applying labels or categories or slogans or buzzwords to whatever we're dealing with and then thinking we've understood it. The problem with using labels or categories or slogans or buzzwords, I'll just refer to all of these as labels from here on. The problem with using them in this way is that it causes us to miss the concreteness, the complexity, the unique details, the possibly changing features of whatever it is we're trying to understand. It could be an activity or event, a person, a group, an organization, a nation, a religious doctrine, and so on. In other words, labels are abstract. They don't tell us much that contributes to our understanding. They have very little content. And often labels express value judgments, but without explaining the basis of that judgment, how it was reached. Labels also tend to be prefabricated, so to speak, and typically they're not of our own making. What the available labels mean, how they're to be applied, and to whom, are often already established through their wide use by many people. They're lying at hand, ready for us to use. You can see them everywhere on Twitter. In practice, labels are often little more than hasty generalizations. They spare us the hard work of actually digging into the details of whatever we're trying to understand, which is always far more complex than the labels suggest. Instead of actually coming to grips with the particular facts, circumstances, and individuality of a person or an event, we categorize them according to certain isolated characteristics and then toss them into their own mental box where they're walled off from other things that are in other boxes. Using labels to define problems also sets us on a path to one-size-fits-all solutions, which usually aren't very effective and sometimes turn out to be counterproductive, even disastrously so, in the unintended consequences they produce. Now, labels, categories, concepts, they can all have an appropriate place in our knowing and communicating. We need them to express what we've understood, and they can be useful when time is short and there's a pressing need to distinguish quickly between different kinds of things. But they're a poor, and quite misleading substitute for understanding itself. For all these reasons, when we mistake our ability to use labels, categories, slogans, buzzwords for actual understanding, we establish a mismatch between what we think is going on and what is actually going on. Another misleading substitute for understanding is composed of emotion-laden images. Images can evoke thoughts, emotions, memories. It can happen that when you see an image, say a photo or a video, you have an emotional response that surges forward so immediately and strongly that you feel you've grasped the full meaning of what you've just seen. This happens to all of us. But often images don't supply all the details and context we need to thoroughly understand whatever the image or video is about. This requires a search for additional data and asking further questions for understanding and verification. And that, too often, doesn't happen. So it's crucial that we be clear about the nature of real understanding so that we don't get fooled by substitutes in our own thinking or in the thinking of other people. I want to talk next about how to improve in the way that we verify the correctness of our understanding. If our desire to know is fully engaged, then we aren't satisfied with merely reaching a way of making sense of things. What we want is to make sense of things correctly. We want the truth. And not every way that we figure things out, not every hypothesis, not every grasp of certain interrelations in our experience constitutes a correct understanding. It's only possibly correct. This means that once we've reached a possible explanation of whatever we're wondering about, we next have to figure out what we would need to know in order to determine whether our understanding is correct or not. Then we have to gather the evidence to the extent we can. We have to weigh the evidence, evaluate it, in order to determine whether it's sufficient to confirm the correctness of our understanding. Once we've determined that it is sufficient, we're in a position to state that we know something true about some aspect of the world as it actually is. Sometimes we reach a determination that the evidence shows that our understanding is false. Sometimes the evidence doesn't show us one way or the other, and all we can say is, I don't really know. Now, when talking about verification, it's important to distinguish between the confidence that we feel when we've judged that our understanding is correct because we know that all the relevant evidence has been assessed. So we have that awareness of all the work that went into checking and verifying. And in contrast, we can judge that our understanding is correct because we feel passionate about it, or because we want our understanding to be correct so that we can have the satisfaction of being right, of being vindicated, of getting our way, and so on. None of those is adequate for helping us get to the truth, those last things I mentioned. The only thing that counts for verification of our understanding is sufficient evidence. Nothing about the way we feel about it is relevant. Our desire to know is what is to serve as our guide in this part of our figuring out process, as in every other part. It's also good for each of us to notice whether we tend to move too quickly to thinking that we know the truth, we jump to conclusions, or too slowly, we're overly hesitant to reach conclusions. So be aware of that tendency if you have it, and try to compensate for it. We also need to keep in mind the fact that many of our determinations about what's true are only probably correct. There are many situations in which we have to figure out what we can, but there isn't enough evidence to give us certitude. So we say instead, it's probably correct, or this might be correct, or I'm fairly certain this is correct. There are degrees of probability that we assign. Finally, a few words about outsourced knowledge. Most of what we use to make sense of the world, to figure it out, is made up of things we've taken other people's word for. Parents, friends, teachers, books, social media, news media, experts. we haven't figured those things out for ourselves. We've accepted them as true because we trust the sources from which we received them. I call this outsourced knowledge. We need it. We would know very little about the world without it. But we also have to be careful. What we pick up from others can be communicated in the form of labels, headlines, summaries, slogans, and so on. It may be expressed with emotionally loaded words and images and value judgments, but not with much understanding. So it's important that we treat outsourced knowledge with caution and not automatically as facts to be accepted on faith. Ask questions, develop your understanding, examine the evidence to the extent you can before you assent. Also, consult multiple sources that you've found to be trustworthy, and place your trust in sources that make it easy for you to see what questions they asked and how they arrived at their understanding, how they figured out that their understanding was correct, the evidence that it was based on, and so forth. Any source that ignores questions, suppresses questions, doesn't answer objections, and so forth, ought to be looked at fairly carefully. They may not be particularly reliable. Also, beware of claims that the knowledge that someone is sharing is certain. So much of our knowledge about complex matters is probable to some degree. Most of it is not certain. So beware when you see people who claim to have certitude about complex topics. Now, some concluding remarks. We have to help each other figure out the world effectively, to pay attention to what's important, to ask good questions, to engage in the work of understanding things in detail, and to test our understanding so that we get it right. Now, we can't make anyone, including ourselves, have a question or an insight, but we can facilitate the occurrence of questions by drawing people's attention to data that are relevant to the issue in question. There's an art to this, and it requires intelligence and persistence. We can share with people what we've done to figure things out, the questions we've asked, the answers we've gotten, the evidence we've accepted or rejected. Conversely, we should make a habit of accepting help from others who offer us data we've overlooked, or questions that haven't occurred to us, or insights that we ourselves haven't had, or evidence that hasn't been available to us. Figuring out the world is a communal enterprise. I also want to say something about how we should regard other people with whom we have disagreements about what's true. We need to develop the habit of noticing when we're having strong negative feelings toward other people, people we disagree with. Those feelings may be contempt or excessive fear, excessive anger, hatred. Emotions like these can overpower our desire to know, making us blind to much of what is actually true about people. Strong negative emotions can anesthetize our curiosity, making it likely that our understanding of those people will be limited to slapping on a negative label whose accuracy we never bother to question. We should try to approach people, therefore, in the spirit of the prayer of Saint Francis. O Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be understood as to understand. We have to approach each other with respect and with love. For the sake of undoing decline and promoting progress, we need to reduce the mismatches between our understanding of the world and the world as it actually is. The fundamental issue is, do we want the truth? Are we committed to living in the world as it actually exists? Or are we content to live with a view of the world that's distorted by fantasies, wishful thinking, mistaken beliefs? We're endowed with a desire to know, a desire for the real, a desire for truth. We have to rediscover that desire, that drive in ourselves. But we have to do more than acknowledge its existence. We have to cultivate it. If it's grown weak from being underused, we may need to revitalize it, even resuscitate it. We may need to work against the other desires that compete with it. Whatever the case, each day we need to recommit to our desire to know and resolve to allow it to set the framework, provide the criteria, and guide our efforts to make sense of the world. We have to choose it, and choose it again, and choose it again, so that it becomes a settled, dependable orientation of our life. So let's strive to be conduits of truth. Let's take responsibility, each one of us, for the way we're making sense of the world. Together, let's try to figure out the world and to live in it as it actually is. I'm J. Michael Stebbins. Thanks for listening.